From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. Open lines in the last hour tonight, kind of a flip-flop. That's because in a moment, a riveting program on how the earth may be making oil with Jerome Corsi, Craig Smith, Black Gold, Stranglehold. Get ready for that one. By the way, congratulations to the Chicago White Sox. They win the World Series over Houston, who fought well as well. Now, the last time Chicago had won the World Series, 1917. So cool that they would win. I love it when those teams win after all those years. Red Sox did that last year. Well, is this going to become Tropical Storm Beta? Right now, it's a tropical depression. It is located over the southwestern Caribbean. Torrential rains expected for Central America. As a matter of fact, they think maybe 15 inches of rain over Panama. That's enough to sink that area. So we'll keep our eyes on that one. What a brutal, brutal season it has been. Authorities raised Florida's death toll from Hurricane Wilma from 5 to 10 and urged the storm survivors to have patience as they endured long waits for food, water, and other necessities. Governor Jeb Bush took responsibility for frustrating delays at centers distributing supplies to storm victims, but he also said that people who have waited in line for hours seeking relief should have done more to prepare for the storm. He simply says people had ample time to prepare. It isn't that hard to get 72 hours worth of food and water, said Bush, repeating the advice that officials had given days before Wilma blasted across southern Florida. The 21st storm of the busiest Atlantic hurricane season on record, Wilma killed at least 12 people in Haiti, 4 in Mexico, 1 in Jamaica before hitting Florida, 10 there. In New York, a jury has ruled that the Port Authority there was negligent in the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. A long-awaited legal victory for victims of an attack that killed 6 people and injured 1,000 8 years before terrorists brought down the center's twin towers. The jury ruled that the Port Authority, the agency that owned the World Trade Center, was negligent by not properly maintaining the parking garage where terrorists detonated more than a half ton of explosives in a rented van. The American death toll reaches 2,001 now in Iraq, with the announcement that a soldier died in an accident the night before. Meanwhile, 3 mostly Sunni Arab parties said they have formed a coalition. This is the minority party now there, to compete in upcoming parliamentary elections as the minority moves to consolidate its power in the political arena. Iraqi lawyers defending Saddam Hussein, they say they have stopped and suspended further dealings with a special tribunal trying him until their safety is guaranteed, citing the kidnapping and murder of a lawyer representing one of the former dictator's co-defendants last week. A statement signed by Khalil al-Dulami, who heads the former dictator's defense team, said poor security put the lawyers and their families in danger. Due to the extreme deterioration of the security situation in Iraq and the repercussions facing the Iraqi defense team and their families, we are stopping all dealings with the court until the situation is reversed. The United Kingdom Foreign Office, by the way, is to summon a senior Iranian diplomat to protest against his president's comments about destroying Israel. The new president of Iran has called for the Jewish state to be wiped off the map. This is the same guy, by the way, who played a part in the 70s when the United States embassy in Iran was overtaken by those students. If you get up to the coasttocoastam.com website, take a look at the first hot story, the one about Condi Rice, Condoleezza Rice. USA Today pulled a photograph of Condoleezza Rice from its website after a web log revealed it was manipulated, giving the Secretary of State a very menacing, demon-like stare. The remarkable changes were first noted by a web log called The Pen, which cited an original version of the Associated Press photograph. The USA Today editors posted this note after they pulled down the picture, and you've got to go take a look at that picture on the coasttocoastam.com website. The photo of Condoleezza Rice that originally accompanied this story, it says, was altered in a manner that did not meet USA Today's editorial standards. The photo has been replaced by a properly adjusted copy. It goes on to talk a little bit more, but you just have to see that picture. Here's a pretty interesting story. A South Carolina senator dissatisfied with the results of an advisory panel's recommendations on tax reform is set to introduce a bill to abolish federal income tax in favor of a levy on business transactions when you buy things. The senator is a Republican out of South Carolina. His name is Jim DeMint, and he says that he would put his plan before the Senate on Thursday. The proposal calls for an end to all personal income taxes and the attendant bevy of related taxes, deductions, exemptions, including the estate tax and the alternative minimum tax. The plan, he says, would eliminate the need for all of us to file income tax. The DeMint plan, which is co-sponsored by Senator Lindsey Graham, also a Republican of South Carolina, includes an 8.5% federal retail sales tax on all new goods and services. Corporate income taxes would be replaced by an 8.5% business transfer tax charged during purchases of supplies or equipment. Now, that's pretty novel, isn't it? And many oil companies have seen their rigs get battered in the Gulf of Mexico this hurricane season, but now the companies are facing a new kind of storm as Congress wants to show all of us that it is concerned about oil companies reporting record profits, and record profits they are. At the moment, it's mainly just a windstorm warning swirl about price gouging. Some in Congress are urging the oil companies to reinvest their profits in new U.S. refineries and energy sources. But some Democrats are also proposing windfall profit taxes, which would make the companies either spend their money on new energy projects or send all that cash to the U.S. Treasury. Now, everybody, right? We all use fuel in some form or fashion. We put gasoline in our cars. We heat our homes with natural gas, maybe propane, maybe oil. We all use energy. But something's been going on this planet for a long, long time, and it's been affecting all of us. In a moment, two people will be my special guests. Jerome Corsi, who's been on the program before, and Craig Smith. We're going to be talking about black gold, the stranglehold, the myth of scarcity, and the politics of oil. Now, I want you to get ready for this, because this is going to be a riveting program that I guarantee you will change your perception of what's going on this planet and where oil comes from. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Two guests with me in the studio. Jerome Corsi received a PhD from Harvard University in political science, and he has written many books and articles. He's an expert on political violence and terrorism. In 1981, he received a top secret clearance from the Agency for International Development, where he assisted in providing anti-terrorism hostage survival training to embassy personnel. In 2005, Dr. Corsi helped found and launch the Iran Freedom Foundation, a not-for-profit educational and charitable organization established to educate the public about the Islamic Republic of Iran and to promote freedom in the region. He's written a book called Atomic Iran. He was on my program in May. Jerome, welcome back to Coast to Coast.
George, great pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Craig Smith is the chairman of the board of Swiss American Trading Corporation, one of the largest and most respected investment firms here in the United States. He is an author, commentator, and a very frequent radio and television guest. He is in the studio with us, too. Hi, Craig.
How are you? Hey, George. Good to be with you.
Both of you have touched on a subject that is very dear to my heart as well. Since I was a little boy, I have always been trying to figure out how all these dead dinosaurs and how all this decayed plant life could end up being fuel. And I got to tell you, as a kid, No, this must have been, I was born in 1950. This must have been when I was about 14 or 15, 64, 65. I was petrified when I would read in my weekly reader, which was this little newsletter we got in the schools in Detroit. I was petrified where it said, we're going to run out of oil one day. It's all over and we need an alternative fuel. And by that time, 1964, I said, my gosh, by the year 2000, that'll be it. It'll be gone. Yet it keeps coming and coming. It's like nobody has shut the spigot off. What's going on, Jerome?
Well, George, you're exactly right. You know, I grew up in Cleveland. And in 1946, I was born. Ever since I can remember, we've been running out of oil. And yet today, there's more proven reserves of oil than ever in history. 1.2 trillion barrels. And just like you, George, I said it can't come from dinosaurs. I mean, there weren't enough of them. And how did it work? No one ever could prove how it came from dinosaurs.
And how did it get down so deep?
Right. I mean, I had a cat that died. We buried it. Dig it up a year later, there was no oil.
No oil. You know? And it definitely wasn't down there 5,000, 6,000 feet or even further.
Exactly. And as a kid, I remember reading some of the old science things, and the Soviets were finding oil in the 50s, 5,000, 6,000 meters underneath the earth. And if they could find oil that far down, there weren't any dinosaurs that far down. It had to be from another origin. And that's why we wrote Black Gold Stranglehold around the science that was developed by the Soviets and Thomas Gold, who was really an astrophysicist. I mean, he was in Cornell and wrote a book that was just really revolutionary, arguing, as the Soviets did, that the Earth makes oil on a constant basis from deep within the Earth. And it exudes up through cracks in the earth, and we're not going to run out. It's a constantly made natural abiotic product. Abiotic has nothing to do with dying old dinosaurs or plants, decaying forests. It's made on a constant basis every day by the earth.
And by tonight, I think we'll find out just why that is and why the oil industry continues to scare us about the possibility that one day we will run out of this kind of fuel and what's really going on behind the door to get the prices up. It's just incredible the work that you, Jerome, and Craig did in this work. You know, Craig, I have talked to a lot of people who are beginning to get on this bandwagon. 5-10 years ago, there weren't a lot of people who would accept this theory of abiotic oil. Now, you can talk to a lot of people and they're beginning to say, well, maybe this is possible. What's changing their minds?
You know, George, I think it's just the information that's now coming to the forefront. I mean, when Jerome and I were researching the book, it just seemed to be everybody that I was talking to about the research we were finding were saying, gosh, that makes sense to me. I knew that it didn't come from dinosaurs. It didn't make any sense. How could 1.2 trillion barrels, I mean, how many dinosaurs would it take to make 1.2 trillion barrels of oil? They would have eaten all the foliage off the earth. The earth would have been barren. It just didn't make any sense. And of course, Thomas Gold, being an astronomer, knew that the universe was full of hydrocarbons, Halley's Comet, the tail. We knew methane was existent there. There surely weren't any dinosaurs on Halley's Comet. So I think what's happening, George, is more people are starting to put good old-fashioned common sense to it. They're challenging the current logic and theory that's out there, and they're saying to themselves, it's got to be something different than what we've been told because we haven't run out.
And I think when M. King Hubbert put together his peak oil theory years ago, he had no idea that today they'd still be finding more and more oil reserves, right?
Well, that's right. You know, as we wrote about Hubbert and how he put together the peak theory, it was almost like he put it on the back of a napkin, and he drove the data into this curve. Looks like a mountain, you know, a peak curve. It raises up to a top point, and then it declines like a normal bell curve to nothing. And he forced the data into it, so that when Hubbert had the peak, and he said we're going to run out of oil in the 70s. Well, then we found tremendous amounts of oil around the world, so they just revised it.
Yeah.
because it's almost, George, like inherent in the idea. If oil is fossil fuel, there are only so many dinosaurs, so we have to run out of oil.
Now, if that were the case, if we did get our oil from dead dinosaurs and plants, the theory holds up. Eventually, we're going to use all that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sure. I mean, we've got to look at the numbers. In 1980, there were 645 billion barrels of proven reserve. Then by 85, it went to 670 billion. In 1990, a trillion. 1995, it went back down to 999 billion. Now it's over 1.28 trillion barrels.
And they keep finding more, Craig.
Well, it's like the Saudis. The Saudis have thought for years they only had 264 billion barrels of oil, but their own oil minister just revised that number upwards by 200 billion barrels. Rex Tillerson, the president of ExxonMobil, has been publicly seen making statements that there could be as many as 3 trillion to 7 trillion. I have it right here in a press release of barrels of oil out there. So why do we say we're running out?
Why are some regions of the planet more plentiful with oil than others? Case in point, we still have a political problem with Middle Eastern oil. It has changed the complexity of I think, this planet. Why, if the planet makes its own fuel, and I believe it does, why are some regions more loaded with oil than others?
It probably has to do with the fissures, the nature of the subterranean rock, even down to the mantle. I mean, conceivably, it was an area hit by meteorites that was fractured. Mm-hmm. But if oil is made deep within the earth and is seeping up, it's going to seek to come through fissures. And that's what the Soviets found. And likely, if we really studied that in the Middle East, we'd find that the region was uniquely suited to having oil seep up into it.
They're in the right place at the right time.
Exactly, George. And this abiotic theory of oil being deep within the earth would suggest that anywhere we drilled, if we went deep enough into the mantle of the earth, we're going to find oil. And the pools of oil that we're discovering underneath Kazakhstan, one of the stans near Afghanistan below the Soviet Union, ex-Soviet Union, that there's, it's almost like that whole country is sitting on one huge pool of oil deep down within the earth, which has been discovered and explored within the last 5 years. Or Iran. Iran has gotten, it's gone, you know, like almost 25% increase in the amount of reserves that they say they have within 1 year by more exploration and looking deeper. Take a look at offshore in the United States, in the Gulf. Offshore is the fastest growing area of oil exploration in the world. What we write in Black Gold Stranglehold is that there is enough oil in the continental United States and Alaska and offshore that if we realized it, we could be oil independent. We do not have to be importing 60% of our oil.
I get calls from people, farmers who own farmland that have oil wells that are owned by the big oil companies. They lease the property from these farmers. And these guys call me on the air and they say, George, they're all capped. They're not pumping anything out of it.
Exactly. And, you know, much of it has been capped until the price comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And the oil companies are sitting on huge reserves that they're waiting for the price to come up on. But there is no reason in the world why we need to pay this much for gasoline. I mean, I think about all the truckers tonight listening to the program. We're going to be worried if they don't get their surcharges. They may not even have profitable trips that they're running through. And there's no reason for that. We haven't built a new refinery in the United States in the last 30 years. If we start getting into what we've argued in the book, oil is plentiful. We really are awash in crude oil, even right now in the United States. What we need is new refineries, and we need to change our thinking to realize that oil is plentiful, not fossil fuel. Doesn't have anything to do with dinosaurs, and we're not going to run out.
Just this week, British Petroleum announces a 34% increase in profits. Exxon will report tomorrow its biggest profit in its history. They're making money hand over fist.
And wait until people get their heating bills. That's when the next shoe is going to fall. Right. Wait until in the Northeast when the...
This year.
George, you know, natural gas prices have almost tripled in the last year and a half. Now, how is that going to affect people that are using natural gas to heat their homes, heat hot water, continue to cook on their stoves? It's got to change, and it can.
I want to talk with you both about natural gas as well as oil tonight as well, and just to get your thoughts on that and how it's created. And when we come back, we're going to go back a little bit. We're going to go back to a World War II. There's a reason for that, because that's where a lot of this started. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with our guest, Jerry Corsi, Craig Smith. Their book is called Black Gold Stranglehold, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you haven't picked up your free CD yet called Perfect Possession on Exorcisms, hurry up, because eventually it will end. The CD is yours when you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter or renew. A couple ways to do that. Call 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online. You'll see it right there on the coasttocoastam.com website, right there on the home page. By the way, up there on the coasttocoastam.com website, you'll get a look of our two guests, Jerry Corsi and Craig Smith, under the Digicam. So it is right there for you. You'll see an icon there. It says Digicam with a little camera there. It's all yours. Just click it, and there you are. You'll see them in the studio as they were moments ago. Now, in the third hour, we'll open up the phone lines. I've done a little flip-flop tonight because we have Jerry Corsi and Craig Smith here in the Los Angeles studios, and then I'll have open lines with you at the last hour of the program tonight. So I've just flipped things a little bit. Jerry and Craig, let's talk a little bit about more of the oil. Let's go back to when a lot of this started, when the world started using fuel, and it was probably right around World War II, wasn't it?
Certainly World War II was when we really, you're exactly right, George, we recognized the strategic significance of oil. We write in the book on Black Gold Stranglehold about two major studies. The U.S. did the strategic bombing study, and we showed that for all the bombing we did in Germany, as many airplanes were being made after we bombed the plants as before, because the Germans learned how to decentralized, and the machines were okay. They could keep the machines running even if the buildings were
bombed.
They had
them in little parcels, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They just spread them around. But what the Germans couldn't survive is when we bombed the oil, because without oil, they couldn't run the Panzer tanks.
Right.
They couldn't fly the airplanes. And Stalin recognized this. Stalin had two advantages against the Nazis. One was the Russian winter. The second was that we were bombing the oil fields of Polesti and the others, and he captured the Hungarian oil fields. Mm-hmm. So he commissioned a major study, Stalin did, at the end of World War II, because there was research coming out of the Russian scientists. They were finding oil 5,000-6,000 meters below the surface of the earth.
Meters.
This is down miles, 5,000-7,000 miles down below the surface of the earth, finding oil. And that was brought to Stalin's attention. And he commissioned his own Manhattan-style project to have the scientists go and study oil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Stalin was no scientist, but he knew that if he could find oil that deep, and it was coming naturally from the earth, he wanted it.
Right.
And he wanted it for political reasons.
Sure, and control.
Control. He didn't want to be in the position the Nazis were, where they would run out and didn't know they had their own oil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, beginning in the 50s, with Stalin doing that, the Russians went from almost having no oil at all to where the Russians are today, which is the second major oil exporter in the world, right behind Saudi Arabia. And they found tremendous resources of oil deep down.
And isn't it interesting that since their collapse of the Soviet Union, their growth from World War II to that point was absolutely astounding, where they
exactly.
were able to keep pace with us, get into space before us, and I think a lot of that had to do with its knowledge of oil and that kind of exploration.
They had the ability to be self-sufficient in oil, because when Stalin recognized that, he set the scientists to work, they found the oil, and they produced it. Now, we did not take advantage of that. Much of that scientific literature, there are thousands of articles mm-hmm. written in Russian. They weren't translated. our scientists didn't think the Russians had anything that we could benefit from.
Right.
Stalin had no advantage in letting us know of this, and our scientists were all locked into the idea of fossil fuel, so their minds weren't open to have another concept.
So the Russians were really the first ones to start talking about oil as being abiotic?
Well, it goes back, if you look at the history of this, Mendeleev, who discovered and produced the atomic chart, the periodic chart that we all learn in chemistry, he was arguing against another Russian scientist, a guy named Lomonosov, and Lomonosov wrote in 1757, because they were finding biotic material in oil, he said it must have come from dinosaurs and ancient forests. And Mendeleev said, nonsense. So there were hints in the scientific debate from scientists who said this couldn't possibly be synthesized from dying animals and plants, but they weren't listened to. I guess because when we think about, you know, pond slime and things, it looks kind of like oil, and it wasn't very critically thought about, except when the scientists by Stalin were put on it, they proved that they could find oil very, very deep within the earth where there weren't possibly ever any dinosaurs.
I think another thing to look at, George, is the Russians were looking at oil from a strategic standpoint, a vulnerability for future wars. We had just released the atomic bomb, and I think personally our scientists at that time were a little bit arrogant. We figured, hey, we have the bomb, we're impervious.
Sure.
They can attack wherever they want. All we have to do is drop a bomb and we can kill a million people and it will end. So the Russians were looking at it strictly from a strategic standpoint, and that's why they put the time and energy to develop technology that today is, if pace is kept, they will outproduce Saudi Arabia for oil production in calendar years 2006, 2007, and 2008. Now, isn't that amazing? Yeah, why aren't we hearing that in the news?
And had the Soviet Union stayed intact, all those splinter countries, like Kazakhstan and everything else, all of those would be under the umbrella of the Soviet Union. Their reserves would be huge.
Unbelievable. Matter of fact, we talked about it on the break. I can't imagine a listener has ever heard Russia ever complaining that they're running out of oil, or that they don't have enough oil, or that they can't meet their energy needs.
Right.
Quite to the opposite. They are supplying oil to the world, and I think strategically that's something that we have to look at as a nation.
That's a good point. What about China? Are they producing oil over there?
Not very much. Again, China has not focused on their scientists looking deep enough for oil. And China has not been focused on yet the oil they're going to need for the expansion of their economy. They're right now on a track of getting it from Iran and other trading partners of that nature, anti-American trading partners. They seem to be making deals that are sufficient there to get them the oil they need.
Right.
But China's going to, if you look at the growth rate in China is going to be probably two or three times the growth rate in the United States. So by the year, you know, 2025, you're going to have China dramatically increasing their need for oil, as is India. Now, we'll still be using more a day at that point
than anybody.
But they're going to be increasing by a rate where, let's say, 50 years from now or 70 years from now, their economies are going to become very competitive in size to ours, and their need for oil is going to grow to be comparable to ours.
Well, I guess if we're all wrong about abiotic oil, all of us, that's about the time period we're going to find out about it.
You bet. And you know what's interesting, what Jerry just pointed out, if you look at the demand that will come out of the United States in 2010, 15, 25, so on and so forth, it's about a 1.5% a year increase. On the other hand, China's demand is going to increase by 3.9% a year, and India 4.1%. Now, these are statistics that come right from our Department of Energy. So when they're forecasting the future, they're looking at huge increases of demand coming from areas that we don't really have that great a relationship with unless we're buying stuff for Walmart.
And when you're talking about the future, these oil companies are not stupid. these people are brilliant.
Absolutely.
They know how to manipulate your mind. They know how to trick you into thinking there's a shortage so they can increase the price. They know how to keep the price at a level, and then they drop it just at the boiler point. When they think Americans are just ready to bust at the seams, they'll drop it 30 cents a gallon or 40 cents. It's still higher than it was the year before.
That's right.
But then your feeling is you got a break, you got a deal. So they're very smart. And I sit back and I look and say, all right, if oil comes from fossil fuels and if peak oil is real, we're eventually going to run out. These very brilliant people will move into a different form of energy. They're going to get hydrogen going. They're going to be ready for us because they want to make money and they're not stupid. They're not doing that. It finally dawned on me that the reason why they're not doing it is because of this theory. They know they have an endless supply of oil.
Right. It's like the Atlantis project in the Gulf that they just spent $2.5 billion on, George, that's going to come online in the third quarter of 2006. That's going to produce about 150,000 barrels of oil a day. Now, who in their right mind, who's a CEO, would invest $2.5 billion unless they knew they were going to get back at least $2.5 billion and more in profit?
Yeah.
But it just doesn't make any sense.
It is brilliant marketing, though, isn't it, George? I mean, it's all from dinosaurs, the oil companies say, and we're going to run out because there are only so many dinosaurs. So they get to constantly hold a fire sale on oil, scaring people that we're never going to have enough. We have to conserve it. When the truth is, we have today 1.2 trillion barrels of proven oil reserves, more than ever in the history of man, and our increase of it has been dramatic over the last, almost doubled since 1970 worldwide, and proven reserves continue to expand dramatically. Those are the underlying statistics which do not jive with the idea that it's fossil fuel, it's hit a peak, we're going to decline down to nothing, and everything is going to go completely to the point where we have no energy left.
And we just heard the other day, the RAND Corporation came out with a study that in the Great Basin, Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming, we have an additional, on top of the reserves Jerry talked about, 1.1 trillion barrels worth of reserves locked in the oil shales of Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming. George, the more we look, the more we find we're not running out of oil.
And then when an oil platform sucks out the oil, it fills up years later, doesn't it?
That's right. There's a history, and it's very little documented to the public, but it's known by the oil geologists throughout the Middle East. We write about in Black Gold Stranglehold, a Eugene 330 in the Gulf. These are wells that have replenished. They're drilled, and they end up having reservoirs of oil below at very deep levels that then come up and fill in the oil that was drilled out. The oils do it comes up. If it's coming up from deep within the earth, abiotic, being produced on a continuous basis, the pressure is going to drive it to the surface. It's going to replenish what's taken out.
Might take a year or two, right?
Sure.
Or longer.
Well, it's like the Eugene Block 330 that Jerry's talking about. When they originally drilled the hole in 1972,
that's in the
George,
Gulf, right?
That's
in
correct.
The Gulf.
They were producing about 15,000 barrels a day. Then it dropped to 4,000, mm-hmm. which is the traditional Hubert's peak. You know, it peaked out. Mm-hmm. Now it's on the decline.
It seems like he's right.
Of course. Well, today it's back to pumping 13,400 barrels a day, and they're figuring that there are reserves of over 400 million barrels in that one hole.
Just that one spot.
I mean, it's just, you know.
Oh, my God.
But it is ridiculous because you've got, I mean, the book's coming out, you know, Twilight in the Desert. All Saudi Arabia is going to be pumped dry. Well, Saudi Arabia just announced that they think they've got double the reserves if they go and really explore further and fully report what's available.
Right.
It isn't, you know, 260 billion barrels. It may be more like 520 billion barrels. The estimates continuously increase. And what the peak oil theorists do is they say, oh, we were just wrong. Maybe it won't run out in 1970. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll run out in 2020.
Right.
And then as we get to, you know, 2006, and we've still got more reserves
and
we're using more every day. Well, I said, well, we were just wrong. Maybe it'll be now 2050 that we run out. They don't stop to think that maybe we're awash in oil because the Earth is continuously producing it. And if we have the right theories and look for it deep enough as an abiotic product, forget about the dinosaurs, forget about the old decaying forests, go look at what the Earth, deep within the mantle of the Earth, produces on an everyday basis, combining two of the most common elements available in the Earth, hydrogen and carbon, in various forms. I mean, you know, if you want methane, go stick a pipe in a landfill. It doesn't take any dinosaurs in that landfill.
Or a cow pasture.
Or a cow pasture. I mean, and yet, the public has been told, school children are taught, we all say fossil fuel is synonymous with oil. And the truth is, the Soviet scientists around the world, scientists like Thomas Gold at Cornell, wrote a book in 1998.
He's still alive?
No, he passed away. He was in his 80s. He was a brilliant, very controversial scientist who had many breakthrough discoveries. That he was one of the first people to work on radar with the British in World War II. He mm-hmm. was an astronomer who got attuned into radio technology applied to astronomy and radar. And where his intuition came is he was doing the spectrography analysis of planets, realizing the elements on these planets. And he realized that planets like Saturn had tremendous amounts of hydrocarbons on them. And there were no dinosaurs on Saturn as far as anyone could ever tell.
Well, you know, you said something about fear. And I think what they're trying to do is keep us in fear. Fear that we're running out of oil, fear that there's going to be a pandemic flu, fear of everything that happens. And I think their whole approach is, whoever they may be, is just to keep all of us with their thumb on top of us, just always constantly scared, afraid.
Well, and I think that's because most people don't want the incredible lifestyle that we live in America to ever change. I mean, let's be honest with ourselves. We live a lifestyle that's second to none in the rest of the world. The average citizen of the world travels by ox cart. We travel by individual automobile.
Yeah.
And how did we get that, George? We got that by being able to get replenishable, steady supplies of inexpensive energy so that we could build buildings, heat buildings, air conditioned buildings, use transportation. I mean, think about it. Jerry flew in from New York today. I drove up from San Diego. You couldn't do that without energy. And energy gives us this incredible life that we have here in America. So what would be easier to do? Threaten your lifestyle. People will change mm-hmm. and do whatever you ask them to
That's
do.
That's right. You know, if gasoline, and we're going to talk about that next hour, it's ridiculous price because it could go even higher. It's hovering at three now, higher in some spots. If it were back down to something manageable, $1 a gallon, $1.25, cars would be selling again. The economy would be just booming like crazy. There's got to be a reason then why they want the price higher and for all of us to be stumbling along. Why do they want to do that to
us? You're very right to talk about fear, George. I think you're really on to something here, that fear is part of the overall, what we call black gold stranglehold. The stranglehold is for the average person to think that we're running out of oil and that it's reasonable to pay these outrageous prices. That the truth is, there's plenty of oil. There's plenty of crude oil right now in the United States. The barriers are political. We have not built a new refinery in the United States in 30 years. 30 years. Today, with the environmental restrictions, with all of the regulations, what you're going to have to do is spend hundreds of millions of dollars, take tens of years, and then no one wants the refinery in their backyard because it's smelly. You know, there are areas where we could put refineries out of the Gulf. I grew up in Cleveland. There were refineries in Cleveland. The Great Lakes are mm-hmm. there. You can bring in oil through the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Sure.
And the industrial development of an area like Cleveland could be revitalized. That we need to break through the political barriers and the fear barriers, which go when we realize that oil is not fossil fuel and it's truly plentiful in the earth.
When we come back, let's talk also about global warming, which I happen to believe we're in a cycle. That's it, just an earth cycle. And then this incredible price of gasoline, which is around $3 a gallon. You think it might go how high? Just one number,
oh,
Jerry?
$5 easily.
It's already $5 in England now.
Here in the United States?
No, in England.
No, but I think here in the United States, you think it'll go to $5?
It went to $5 in Atlanta during Hurricane Katrina.
That's true. We'll be back.